This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways, and all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This from Martin to start the show. Martin writes, Kevin, do you think half-court shots are more common than they used to be? Steph Curry hit one tonight, meaning last night, from the same spot the Michigan State player beat Maryland from. Seems like we see these all the time now. Thank you for that, Martin. I will answer your question here in a moment. Ted Leonsis, again today, just another chunk of my long conversation with Ted, interview with Ted from my podcast on Wednesday. You'll hear what he thinks about the Alex Ovechkin run, his relationship with Alex Ovechkin over the years. Does he have a solution to fixing the NBA All-Star game after the four nations tournament took place, and you'll hear what Ted said to me asking him about the reaction that people had to his intended move many, many months ago now to Potomac Yards. It obviously did not work out. So real quickly, Steph Curry, if you were not paying attention to the NBA last night, and I know a lot of you do not, Steph Curry had a nightmare. Steph Curry went for 56 in Golden State's win at Orlando. He is, simply put, the greatest shooter in the history of the game. He is the greatest long-distance shooter we've ever seen, clearly. He was 16 of 25 from behind. 16 of 25 overall, 12 of 19 from behind the arc. Do you know how hard it is to even get 19 three-point attempts up in a game? You know, some of you may say, well, you know, the NBA, they don't play defense, or the coach gave him the green light. Even if a coach gives him the greenest of green lights, to get open behind the arc when you are one of those kinds of shooters to attempt 19 three-pointers is pretty remarkable, and he made 12 of them. By the way, in the history of the game now, Steph has 45 nights in which he's gone for 9 or more three-pointers made. 45. Second to him, Damian Lillard with 14. He's 4 touchdowns behind Steph's mark. More than 4 touchdowns. 4 touchdowns and a field goal behind Steph Curry's mark of 45 nights in which he's had 9 or more three-pointers. So he had 56. They were getting their ass kicked last night in Orlando, and he brought them back single-handedly. The Warriors are now, I think it's 6-1 with Jimmy Butler, or 7-1 with Jimmy Butler since the Jimmy Butler trade. I actually put a wager on them at plus 900 last week to win the Western Conference. I think they're that much better after the Butler trade. But anyway, back to Martin's note to me. I do think that I don't have any data as to the frequency, whether or not it's increased over the years and made half-court shots. I don't have that on me. You know, what's interesting is you'll see in a lot of NBA games, and I hate this, you'll see a lot of players not shoot from in the backcourt, you know, after an inbounds pass at the end of a quarter, say, because they don't want their field goal percentage to drop. I mean, that's absurd. Why not? So I looked up like the longest shots in NBA history to kind of find out how many of them have happened more recently. They don't have, I couldn't find any data. If anybody finds it, you know, send it to me at Kevin Sheehan DC on whether or not half court shots or long, you know, half court or further shots are more commonplace now than they used to be. The longest successful shot in NBA history, Baron Davis from 89 feet. So that's 1 foot inside the end line, and he must have just heaved it. I don't remember it. This happened on February 17th, 2001. That's the longest shot in NBA history. Baron Davis, 89 feet. Norman Van Leer in 1977 made an 84-foot shot. Magic Johnson made an 84-footer in a playoff game in April of 1987. So we don't have anything in the longest shots ever converted that indicates it's a more recent thing. But look, I mean, this isn't going to be a tell necessarily either. I was just wondering if we were going to see this particular data skewed towards the last 5 to 10 years, and it doesn't. LeBron's got an 83-footer in 2007 when he was a very young player in Cleveland. Herb Williams made one from 81 feet in 1986. Zaire Williams made one from 79 feet for Memphis in 2023. Then you've got, you know, really nothing. Darius Miller made one from 72 feet in 2018. Andre Drummond made one from 71 feet in 2016. Now, in terms of buzzer beater game winners, well, Max Strus made a 59-footer last year to beat Dallas playing for Cleveland. In 2023, Embiid made a three-quarter court shot to tie a game against Boston. In 2021, Devontae Graham made a 61-footer to win the game. That's the longest in NBA history to win a game. 61 feet, Devontae Graham. I didn't know that before I started looking into this information. That was a Pelicans win over Oklahoma City. So the last three, and they include some incredible long-distance shots, were very recent vintage. One of the most famous NBA game-winning shots, the logo, Jerry West, Game 3 of the 1970 NBA Finals, hit a 60-foot shot at the end of regulation to tie the game, sending it to overtime. The Lakers did lose that game to the Knicks, and keep in mind, in 1970, that 60-footer was a two-pointer. It was a two-point shot that tied the game and sent it to overtime. That was one of the most famous shots in NBA history. It came during the finals. It was Jerry West. But yeah, there's really not a lot of data that would support Martin the way you feel, but I agree with you. I feel the same way. I think part of it is that we've seen the extension of the three-point shot. You know, I mean, we saw this starting 10, 12, you know, at least 10 to 15 years ago. Once players were essentially given the green light to not just shoot threes, but to shoot 30-foot threes and 35-foot threes. And Steph really changed all of that. I give Steph a lot of the credit for being the greatest shooter that's ever lived and being given a total green light from Steve Kerr to shoot it from anywhere at any time, in transition, in the half court, with plenty of time on the shot clock, with, you know, next to no time on the shot clock. And then everybody started backing up. And by the way, it changed the game, you know, and it's changed the game in a lot of ways in which people don't like, and you're certainly entitled to your opinion, and I do understand some of that. But it changed the dimensions of how you know spaced the floor, and which meant defensively you had to cover so much more ground. It's one of the reasons it's really hard in the NBA to guard. I mean, we don't see much of that effort in the regular season anyway. The playoffs, it completely changes. But even in the playoffs, we don't see what we used to see. We don't see, 79, 78 games. We don't see 82, 81 games. I mean, occasionally we'll get those. But 20 years ago, we got them all the time. I mean, now part of that too was the hand check rule being relaxed. And once you made it more free flowing from that standpoint, it changed the game. But what really changed the game was the extension of the 3-point shot from the 3-point line just behind it to 5, 6, 7 feet further out, which meant now you've got a guard. So many players, not just Steph and Lillard, but there's so many players that can shoot from deep. And we've seen, even in regular season games, not just all-star games, guys pull up just inside half court. I mean, you're talking, 38, 39, 40 footers. And imagine, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, but imagine you used to have to basically pick somebody up and guard them from the 3-point line in, and now you've got to guard so much further out, it creates so much space in the middle of the floor, and it's really hard to stop teams from scoring in the NBA. So I think that was the beginning of also... by the way, why are guys better shooters today? That's a science question, but the fact that they are allowed to shoot those shots when those shots were always considered to be bad shots, benchable shots in the past, now they practice them more often, and you see, I've said this for many years, you go back 25 years, let's just say 25 years, a half-court shot wasn't a shot, it was a chuck, it was a heave. Now it's a jump shot, so you're getting, stronger legs, you're getting stronger, wrist, and you get a lot of that gets into it. I mean, it was hard to shoot, even for NBA players, a jump shot from 45 feet 25 years ago. Now, it's not that hard at all. So there's part of that involved. But Martin, I do feel like in recent years, I see a lot more three-quarter court shots, half-court shots that go in, that are attempted and that go in. And I think in part because players have gotten so used to shooting long distance threes, and even when you get to half court, that's not a heave, it's not a chuck, it's not just a throw, it's a shot, it's a jump shot, legs get into it, elbow extension, the follow through with your wrist and fingertips, it's a backward rotation of that basketball. You shooters understand what I'm saying. It's a normal shot from half court. It's not just a chuck. It's not just you don't have to run into it. From three quarters court, you got to kind of move into it. You got to get your steps right, and you got to, push off. If you're a right-handed shooter, push off that left, foot and really get into it. But from half court, it's more like a jump shot. So, yeah, Martin, good thought. I agree with you. There's just no data to back it up right now. Maybe somebody will write a story on that. ESPN's got so many of those guys that look at the shooting statistics, and I forget the guy's name for ESPN that's done a lot on the three-point shot and how it's become a much different shot, not just in volume and in percentages, but in depth of shot taken. So, yeah, Steph was incredible last night. I didn't watch the game. I watched the 6-minute highlight of just all of Steph's 56 points. I mean, I think Steph Curry is the greatest ball handler shooter in one body in the history of the game. I don't think there's any doubt he's the best shooter that's ever lived. But I'd go a step beyond that and say he's the best combined shooter and ball handler in one body that we've ever seen. I think that the only player for me, Kyrie's not the shooter that Steph is. I think if Isaiah Thomas had played later on, I think he had the talent and the skill. If three-point shooting had been an emphasis during his playing days, I think you would have seen something similar to Steph today. Because Isaiah could really shoot it. And he could really shoot it from distance. But they didn't take as many threes. And Isaiah was an incredible ball handler. I think Kyrie Irving, actually, just as a ball handler, some might say Maravich, I think Kyrie Irving, just as a ball handler, is in the conversation of the greatest ball handlers of all time. But I think the combination of shooting and ball handling in one body, I mean, you could almost say scoring too, you know, not just shooting, but scoring, because Steph is an incredible scorer too. Steph can hit any mid-range shot. Steph can get to the rim and hit float, you know, get into the paint and hit floaters, get hit the angles he can shoot floaters from. Last night was a show, man. 16 of 25 overall, 12 of 19 behind the arc, 12 for 12 from the free throw line. He had 4 rebounds, 3 assists, and 2 steals, if you are interested. 56 for Steph Curry, who is 36 years old, about to become 37. And I do get the sense that this is that trade for Jimmy Butler was to make one more run at a title with Steph Curry, in the kind of frame of mind, and by the way, still having the ability to go off and carry a team like he did just a couple of years ago for their last title against the Celtics. All right. Lots to get to today. As I mentioned, you'll hear another chunk of my long conversation with Ted Leonsis at 11 a.m. Ben Standig will join us at noon. There is some news related to Myles Garrett. I'll get to that when we come back, and we'll certainly touch on the story related to potentially no tailgating at a new RFK. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseballs and Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, last night, after LeBron James, by the way, had a great game leading the Lakers to a win over the Timberwolves, LeBron led the Lakers with 33 points, 17 rebounds, 6 assists. The Lakers are really good if you're starting to pay attention to this or if you decide to pay attention to the NBA at some point. LeBron's having a hell of a year. Well, after the game, LeBron was asked about recent comments that Anthony Edwards made. Anthony Edwards, the star player for the Minnesota Timberwolves. Anthony Edwards essentially said, I don't want to be the face, you know, the future face of the NBA. By the way, he's not having the kind of year after taking Minnesota to the Western Conference Finals last year that I think people were hoping for. He's a great player. I actually really enjoy watching Anthony Edwards. I actually enjoy him. I think he's got a good sense of humor, good personality, seems to be somewhat self-aware. And he essentially said that, you know, he doesn't want to be the face of the NBA. And so LeBron last night was asked about Anthony Edwards' comments, and he essentially said, why do you want to be the face of the league? He empathized with Anthony Edwards, saying, why do you want to be the face of the league when all the people that cover our game and talk about our game on a day-to-day basis, and he said, you know, the S word, S on our game and on everybody in the game. So a lot of response to LeBron. You know, I always find these conversations, and many times, to be such reaches, such straw man, you know, arguments. Like, not everybody that covers the team S's on the game, on everybody in the game. I mean, they've got networks that just, I mean, it's insufferable how much they talk and laud and praise and build up and hype a league that, quite honestly, the fans overall aren't exactly in sync with. I mean, in fact, the media, I think, overall seems to be more praising of the NBA, especially the league's partners, ESPN and Turner Sports. I mean, you will get Chuck and Shaq and Kenny to, you know, express the way they really feel. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Stephen A. doesn't express the way he really feels either. But for the most part, when, you know, this is what they do, you know, when they create this, everybody's against us, you know, nobody thought we could do this. We feel great about it because everybody was telling us that we couldn't accomplish that. And very often you're just like, well, who said that? You were the favorite in the game, or everybody thought you were going to win the championship, or everybody thought you were going to have a good season. And, you know, a lot of that is self-fueling. You know, they use it, and they delusionally put it together in their mind that everybody's against them, and it fuels them. And whatever it takes to fuel, you know, athletes or teams, use it. You know, if you can trick yourself into believing that everybody's against you all the time and that fuels you and turns you into a better player, go for it. But if you're paying attention to a lot of this stuff, more times than not, it's total straw man. And I think in this case with the LeBron, no, Everybody that covers your game does not talk S about you. That's just not true. I mean, it's actually nauseating for a lot of fans to see how much positive coverage of the game that you guys get during the course of the year, because it's a disconnect for many sports fans who don't love the NBA or used to love the NBA and don't love it as much. But anyway, with respect to, you know, not wanting to be the face of the league, I actually think LeBron has done a pretty damn good job of being the face of the league. You know, do I love LeBron and his personality? I don't. I think there's a little bit of phoniness there. But LeBron has been, you know, comparatively in sports to other faces, to other, you know, kind of heroes of young people, of fans, he's been near the top of the list in behavior and treatment of people, etc. And by the way, I mean, even though I would take Michael and even Magic before LeBron, LeBron in the non-center conversation is an all-time top three player. He is. It's scary. It seems to be getting better. But I think he's actually done a good job of being the face of the league. I will tell you this, though. For, you know, people who don't want to be the faces of the league, don't be. I don't want players who don't feel comfortable in that role. You know, I think it's fine that Anthony Edwards says, I don't want to be cast as the next face of the league. Now, he may not have a lot of control over that because of two things. One, he's a great talent. Two, he is actually, he's got a lot of personality. So it may not be his choice, but if he's not comfortable in that role now, he may become more comfortable later. But it's okay. Here's the key for all of those people in the NBA and in other leagues that are not the NFL, because the NFL is in a different stratosphere. Football in general in this country is just in a different stratosphere. When it comes to criticism, the answer should be, I don't care what they say as long as they keep saying something. Because I think the NBA is potentially at a crossroads here, especially as it relates to their regular season product. The All-Star weekend is now a legitimate debacle of, now, I think, apathy. But caring through anger, through joy, through criticism, through praise, through debate, through argument, through, that's a good thing. They should pray that that continues to be part of the dialogue of the game that they are playing. Because once you stop hearing criticism, by the way, people criticize more than they praise just in general. You know, people do that in retail environments. They do it with sports. But indifference, you know, apathy, of lack of interest, you know, dispassion, those things are much more of a threat to the NBA than criticism is, whether it comes from media or from fans. You know, as long as they're talking about us, that's a good thing. They should want that. And I think LeBron should be bright enough to recognize that. It would actually be, I don't know, maybe not for all of you, but to hear somebody of his stature tell everybody else as a leader in that league, stop with the everybody is S-ing on us. We're lucky when they're talking about us in any light because it means they still care. All right, I mentioned that there's some news on Myles Garrett. Mary Kay Cabot, who is the longtime Cleveland Plain Dealer, you know, reporter covering the Browns, said yesterday that Myles Garrett and his agents have, quote, slammed the door shut on any discussions for a contract extension, and that he is remaining firm in that he does not want to play in Cleveland any longer. He wants to be traded. Now, the Myles Garrett contract, as of right now, he is under contract for two more seasons, 2025 and 2026. And by the way, the base salary numbers are very low. There are, you know, $19 and $20 million cap hits, which are not that terrible necessarily. But there would also be a big dead cap hit to Cleveland if they did deal him in this offseason. But Mary Kay Cabot, who's on top of Cleveland sports and the Browns in particular as much as anybody, says that Myles Garrett is not going to sign a contract extension in Cleveland. Now, does Cleveland need a contract extension? They've got him under contract for two more seasons. You know, so in two more seasons, Myles Garrett will be 31 years old. So maybe two more seasons is what they want. Cleveland, to get Myles Garrett to not want to get traded anymore, they have to come up with a quarterback solution, like an immediate one. Okay, maybe they do draft Shedeur Sanders or Cam Ward, okay, with the number two pick. But if that quarterback isn't ready to play, that's not going to help Myles Garrett if that quarterback's not ready to be Jaden Daniels in his rookie year, you know, or C.J. Stroud. Look, maybe we're on a run here of a change in the way that the readiness of quarterbacks. And Cam Ward's played a lot of football. Shedeur Sanders has played a lot of football. Maybe finding these quarterbacks that have taken a lot of snaps and started a bunch of games is the beginning of a new trend in which young quarterbacks are ready to play and produce much sooner rather than later. We didn't see it from Caleb Williams. He played a lot of college football. Right? So we didn't see it from him in his rookie year. Now, I don't think he had the worst year we've ever seen by a rookie quarterback or a number one. And I do think some of the dysfunction in the Chicago organization probably played into that. And that having, you know, Ben Johnson be a part of his career, you know, if Caleb Williams doesn't take a big jump from his rookie season in the next 2 years, you know, and I think you got to give it time, especially with a new coach and a new system, then you can, I think, start to write a little bit of you know, a summary or an obituary on Caleb Williams' career. But that is so way too premature. I mean, look at these quarterbacks that come back later in their career and get opportunities. We've seen it so much in recent years. Geno Smith, Baker Mayfield, etc. But Cleveland's interesting. I don't know what'll happen here. I think he's going to end up getting traded, but I don't think that it's, I mean, it's 50-50, or for me, maybe 51-49 in favor of him getting traded, just because the quarterbacks that are available for them this year at veteran quarterbacks, is Sam Darnold going to walk into Cleveland and make them a 9 or 10 win playoff team in the AFC North? I don't think so. I mean, I know Joe Flacco did 2 years ago. You know, they also had even better talent there. They had Amari Cooper on the team. Their receivers right now are Elijah Moore and Jerry Jeudy. But I think one of them is a free agent. They have a decent offensive line. They got, you know, a couple of running backs when they're healthy. Obviously Chubb, and they got a lot of talent on defense, obviously, you know, anchored by Myles Garrett. I think Cleveland's always an interesting team, and I'm actually more of a Kevin Stefanski fan than maybe others are. But I don't know that they can come up with the veteran quarterback that comes in and turns them into at least what they were at the end of 2023, which was a playoff team. You know, led by defense in the long ball, really, that year, once Deshaun got hurt. You know, for those of you wondering, Deshaun Watson had another serious injury. There is, you know, legitimate doubt or concern as to whether or not he'll even be able to play, or if he even wants to play. So, anyway. Okay. I want to get to the thing that we saw right at the end of the show yesterday, tailgating at RFK. It does appear as if there's a possibility that if they were to build the stadium on the RFK site open it up in, say, 2031, that the RFK campus is significantly smaller than the FedEx Field, Northwest Field, you know, Landover site, and that Mayor Bowser, in her recent town meeting, said that because of the space and because of the redevelopment plans around the stadium, retail, commercial, you know, all of this stuff that will be going on there, that the parking will be primarily garage parking. So that brings into play tailgating. You know, if there isn't much surface parking and it's all garage parking, and then you add to that, you know, the neighborhood around the stadium putting up signs saying you can't park on the street without a permit of some sort, well, you may be eliminating tailgating from the game day experience. In Eric Flack's story from WUSA Channel 9, the mayor apparently used the Minnesota Vikings downtown stadium as a comparable model for what she envisions in D.C. Vikings fans who spoke with Eric Flack said the move downtown nearly eliminated their once robust tailgating tradition. Said Jason Lane, a Vikings fan, quote, "We really didn't know until almost right before the new stadium opened where we were going to be able to tailgate, and it was very limited compared to what it used to be. The potential loss of tailgating space adds to local residents in D.C. concerns about the stadium project because are they going to get people parking illegally and tailgating on the streets on game day? Those neighborhoods don't want that." So this is a new wrinkle. You know, we haven't discussed this before. The idea that the space is smaller, that there's going to be so much development around that space, that the parking is going to be not surface parking where you would tailgate, but garage parking, which makes it harder to tailgate. Because in garages, you're not going to be able to spark up grills in garages, I would assume, unless they're above ground in open air. I don't know what the rules are, but the bottom line is there are a lot of people that believe tailgating could die at the RFK site. So my question to you is, how big of a deal is this? 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980. For those of you that are involved, you know, in conversations about the new stadium and you have wanted it to be at RFK, does this change your mind? It's really easy. Would you prefer all the tailgating in the world with the stadium remaining in Landover, or a lot less, if not the elimination of tailgating, but the stadium at RFK? Keep in mind, an RFK site, no tailgating, but plenty of places to go and hang out and get ready for the game. There will be plenty of restaurants, etc., around that stadium. And sure, I don't know that you'll be getting happy hour discounts on game day. That's true. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. Does this concern you? And if you have a choice right now, no tailgating but RFK, all the tailgating you want, Landover, what would you choose? Phone lines are open, 301-230-0980. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 and the Team980.com. From my guy Kevinisms on Twitter. It isn't necessarily no tailgating. You replace tailgating with bar hopping, sightseeing, and restaurants. Yeah, I get it. I don't know about the sightseeing part on game day. Unless you're in from out of town or if it's a night game. And there will be, hopefully, with Jaden still around when the new stadium opens up. It's a long way off. A lot of night games. But yeah, I mean, that's what you would end up replacing it with, clearly. You know, it's interesting because I am of an age that I do remember the RFK experience. Went to a lot more games at RFK than I ever did at FedEx Field, I think. Probably. And, you know, tailgating didn't become what it is today. I don't know when it blew up. Tailgating at RFK was nowhere near what tailgating in Landover was. That's my recollection of it. By the way, I remember doing on game days, especially for 4 o'clock games or night games, bars before the games, even more so than tailgating. This actually doesn't bother me. I don't do a lot of tailgating because I'm usually working and have been for 20 years on game day. But I get it. It's a very important part of the game day experience for many. And doing it, you know, with open spaces and grills and games and, yeah, it's a different experience than being in a bar or a restaurant prior to the game. It'd be fine for me. But I'm curious as to what you guys think. 301-230-0980. So which would you prefer? The RFK site with no tailgating or Landover with tailgating? Let's start with our guy Joe in Springfield. Joe, go ahead. Joe, you there?
Hey, as someone who's been I'm here.
Okay, I got you. Start over. Sorry.
Yeah. So as for me, as for who's been going to Landover at Northwest Stadium for the last couple of years, I've always been part of Tailgate Ted's tailgate at the home games I go to, and it's a great experience. Even when back when we were doing really bad, the tailgating was a great experience. We all bonded together, and even though we were about ready to walk into a bad site, seeing how bad the team was going up until this season, it was a great experience because we all just hung around and cared for each other. I mean, and it was better than buying $18 beers at the time at the stadium before they put it down to like, well, I think it's now like $9 or something. I think that's what Josh Harris did. But the tailgating was a good experience. Now, whether they move it to RFK and if we had to lose it, that would lose a good experience. I understand that they wouldn't be able to have the space for it. But for those who love doing the tailgating, to me, I love tailgating because it's a good experience and we'll see what happens. But if it comes to that, great. But for right now, Northwest Stadium, the tailgating is great. RFK, I don't know, man. We'll see what happens. Maybe they get more space for it. I don't know, but we'll see what happens. So take care.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it would be a completely different experience at RFK with respect to surface area parking space. And that's what the conversation is. Look, they may end up having enough space so that you can tailgate, you know, prior to games, but maybe not for the number of people that would want it. Keep in mind, too, although, actually, with the current capacity of the stadium, we'll have probably a similar capacity as it is currently. But when that stadium opened, you know, we were talking about 6,000 when it opened, and it grew to 90,000, and they had plenty of space for all of it. Let's go to my guy Stan in Jersey. Stan, go ahead.
Hey, Kevin, what's going on?
What's up?
Somebody that drives 4.5 hours down to D.C. for these games, I couldn't care less about the tailgating aspect of it because I'm never there in time. But I do go to Yankee games up here, and they do have the parking lot decks and that stuff. And the people still do tailgate with grills in the decks. What it would eliminate is that god-awful rap music, because it would be so freaking loud in those parking decks that you just couldn't have. People would be going crazy.
That's a subjective thing, Stan.
Yeah, I know, but people would be going crazy. But I also hate parking deck parking, the claustrophobicness of it when you're leaving.
It's the worst.
It takes forever to get out of FedEx as it is. What's up?
No, I can't stand underground garage parking for a sporting event. When you leave, it takes forever, and it's noxious. With the fumes from cars.
Yes.
I hate that. I need open spaces too. I'm with you on that.
It would be horrible. Even if the parking decks are above ground, it just takes way too long to get out of Yankee Stadium. And I'm assuming it's going to be the same in Washington. And FedEx has been terrible to begin with, and that's open air, you know, all around. I do have two other quick comments, Kevin. I know you like this stuff, about the tush-push and the overtime, if I can.
Okay.
The tush-push. It's a simple way to eliminate it if you're the teams and the rest of the NFL. When these games are 40-10 in the fourth quarter, or whatever they might be, the teams have to collude and just say, let's do tush pushes on first down, second down, third down. They will send a memo to these teams so quick that you are not allowed to run that type of play in a blowout game at 40-10 in the fourth quarter because everyone's going to be bored and sick and tired of it. Or have a linebacker, instead of what Lou would do about jumping over the top and trying to time it, have him just fly in between the center guard or at the center directly and crush him and just say, hey, we're trying to time the play this way. And then there's an injury, and then they're going to be like, oh, my God, this is crazy. We can't have that happen. Now, as for the overtime, keep it the same way. All they have to do is add the 5 minutes. You don't need to give each team the ball. You just have to keep the same rules where the first team scores, they win. Add the 5 minutes. The problem with the overtime is the team that defers or the team that gets it second only gets one possession. That's the reason that they don't win as much. The team that gets it first, they have a three-minute drive.
With the 10 minutes.
Yeah, the second team then has a four-minute drive, and say they're both field goals. The team that gets it third, so basically the team that opened with the ball,
yep.
That's the last possession. When that second team kicks the field goal, they have to know best we can do is tie because it's only 10 minutes.
I'm with you on this. I think the reduction to 10 minutes, even before that, Stan, when you had 6 and 7 minute drives to open up a 10 minute overtime that resulted in a short field goal, it just, you know, it wasn't enough time to go down and win the game outright. Time to tie it, but not time to win it.
You're right. Even the first team, if they do a 6-7 minute drive and end in a field goal, they know they're not getting the ball back and they're going to tie.
Right.
But it's even worse when.
But I don't think that's what's coming.
Drives.
I think they're gonna change to the playoff rule.
I'd rather them experiment with just adding the 15 minutes and keeping the touchdown. You know, wins
why?
The game.
Why not give the other team a guaranteed possession in the overtime?
I don't mind the first team getting the ball when they score. It's a touchdown. I really don't mind that. I don't think going from 55% to 56% or whatever it did, not that crazy to me. I don't mind. I do mind that team that gets the ball second really only gets one possession in the overtime, and that's it. And I don't think that's fair.
I think what we heard from Troy Vincent is that they're gonna adopt the overtime rule. I think that's what.
I think they will too because it only makes sense to. Why would you have a different rule in overtime and regular season? It's kind of ridiculous to begin with.
Right.
So they are going to go that way. I just wish
I'm fine with that.
With going back to 15 minutes.
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm fine with that. I mean, when it goes to 18 games, by the way, that's when you'll get some pushback from the players that the overtime's now longer and we're playing an extra game, but still I think it's better for the fans.
That whole argument is ridiculous when they shorten it to begin with when they're adding these games also. So that whole thing doesn't make any sense. And how many games
we were talking about maybe 5 games a year in total that went anywhere near the total 15-minute, you know, length in overtime anyway. Thanks, Stan.
Exactly. And here.
Yeah, let me move on. I want to get to the topic. Stan always gets us off topic, but I enjoy the way Stan thinks about a lot of things. Aveen, go ahead. Landover with tailgating or RFK with no tailgating? Go.
Hey, Kevin. I think bars and restaurants are a perfectly fine substitute to tailgating. I think a lot of us in the area who've gone to, you know, Nats games, Wizards games, Caps games have had a lot of fun nights and days just with how good, you know, the bars and restaurant scene has gotten around those venues. And for me, you know, like after a game, I prefer going to a bar after a game for NFL, like after a 1 o'clock game, you want to watch 4 o'clock games. Yeah. And, you know, maybe if I was from Kansas City or Green Bay or a big, you know, college football school in the South, I'd appreciate tailgating more. But for me, it's kind of a turnoff. Like when after a game, you see so many hammered fans, you know, going back to their cars. After an NFL game, like I'm always shocked how much like drunk driving there probably is. And I don't know, maybe this will limit that too. So just these games and Caps games are, I don't have a problem. I think being in D.C. is way more important.
Thanks, Aveen. Appreciate it. I think there's a big difference between baseball, hockey, basketball, and football. Football tailgating is a part of the fan enjoyment of the product. It's not necessarily the way I feel. I mean, and I'm even talking about as a younger person. I mean, I tailgated, yes, but more often than not, went to restaurants and bars before games because I was interested in paying attention to other games. Not that you can't do that now anyway in the parking lot. You can do everything now. But, yeah, I... my preference would be RFK with an incredible scene, restaurant, bar, etc., neighborhood around the stadium. That would be my preference. But I'm not, at this point in my life, you know, the tailgating isn't a big part of my enjoyment of the NFL. Tim in New Hampshire. Tim, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Yeah, no worries, Kevin. Thank you. First time, long time. Honestly, just listening to some of this, you know, we're getting back to the suspension of reality. I guess this is a whole slow news cycle. We got the combine going on like that. But, and honestly, you know, I think everybody wants the stadium to be back in D.C. As a fan base. You know, it's save for a few stalwarts for whatever reason they have. But, you know, I think when we get down to it, there's going to be an awesome scene in D.C. You know, there'll be a lot of great real estate opportunities within that area in and of itself. But,
right,
you know, speaking to the last caller, I think it was Abid, you know, people get hammered are going to get hammered no matter what. It doesn't matter
that's
if they're
true.
In a bar yeah. or in a parking lot.
Yeah.
<You know>?
Right.
And so I think when we get down to it, and if that is the possibility, you know, we get the RFK, I don't think anybody's going to really care. And, you know, I've been to plenty of other stadiums that don't necessarily have a tailgating, you know, policy with parking lots and that, but I don't see, you know, tailgate police coming around and say, hey, what are you guys doing?
Yeah, but what if, I mean, the one thing I didn't get clarity on is will this be underground or above ground garage parking? If it's underground, you can't tailgate in an underground garage, obviously. I mean, when I say that,
yeah,
I mean,
you can't
spark up a grill in an underground garage.
Oh, for sure. But I mean, you know, watching some of those tailgating videos of guys coming off of the Philly Metro and that a couple weeks ago at the
sure.
Super Bowl. I mean, people figure it out. You know, the atmosphere will give way to, I think, positivity and fun. So I don't know. You know, I think the focus just kind of has to be, all right, you know, RFK is what the fan base desires, obviously what the owner desires. And I think putting tailgating on the ballot, so to speak, is a little crazy.
Thanks for the call. Really appreciate it, Tim. All right. Those of you that I didn't get to, sorry. We'll come back to it maybe on another slower day. Up next, a chunk of my interview with Ted Leonsis from my podcast. Here he talks about his relationship with Ovechkin, some thoughts on why the NBA All-Star Game has fallen apart, and what he felt when the reaction came, the negative reaction came to his announcement to moving to Potomac Yards. You'll hear that next. Kevin Sheehan Show, The Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.